funny how life works, because like it's that deal fell through at like the 11th hour. Like, you know, at that point we had, so we're walking through, we're walking through the parking lot, and Dan's like, man, what did you, you said something like, I cook good food, you cook good food, we should do this together. And I was like, yeah, man, you're right. We should. Like, we should totally do this together.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I'm joined, as always, by our dining editor, Lori Frederick. How are you doing, Lori? I know we're in the bowels of dining month right now. How are you holding up?
Good.
I mean, technically, you're listening technically, to this in dining months.
Yes.
We are comfortably in September.
But I already have the less sleep that I will have for the next.
And really, isn't every month days. Dining month for you, Lori? Like, do you tell? Can you tell the difference between October and the other 11 months of the year? Oh, yes. Okay.
Because October is like me covering all the stuff I would normally cover, and then doing, like, I don't know, three or four other projects that people have imagined for me.
That's terrible.
You know, anyway, coming up with the top five things for every day of the month, you know, that's
Lori, you know, you're
there's challenges. But
you know it's not challenging. Talking secretly, to these two guys. Yeah. Hey.
No.
Hey.
Seamless transition.
Yeah. So we have a returning guest. We're here with chefs Dan Jacobs and Dan Van Wright of Dan Dan and Esther Ev. And this time we're going to talk about actual food.
we talked about actual. We looked back through the archives because this is our. We've done over 150 of these, so pardon our low brain.
Congratulations, real quick on that. That's like that's a pretty big, cool, you know, milestone. That's awesome.
We've really mastered the art of wasting time for 4 hours.
We mastered the art
every
of talking.
Other Monday. Yeah. But our earliest conversation, or our most recent conversation, I believe, with the two of you, was about authenticity and about, you know, that never-ending question.
That word about authenticity and how it pertains or does not pertain to food.
But something we didn't hit quite as much on that episode, because we were all, we were in the muck of authenticity conversations, was how these restaurants came about. It was how you two tandemed together, and how Dan Dan and Esther F came to be. So, origin story times.
Oh man, back in the time machine. I feel like especially with the last 2 years, it feels like it's a long time ago. I mean, in a really good way, like not in a bad way, but it feels like man, that was a while ago.
A decade passed between.
It was a while ago. How long officially?
I mean,
I'm trying to think how long.
Festa
officially.
Was just this weekend.
Yeah. Man. So that was the start of it. I mean, if you really want to get to like the root start, I mean, me and Dan met doing chef dinners. There was a series of dinners called the Best Milwaukee Beer Series, and it was you know five restaurants paired with five different breweries, and Roots had signed up for it with Hinterland and a few other places, and I had no idea about it. All of a sudden, these guys just showed up like at Roots, and I had just been chef for maybe a month or a month and a half. This is after Paul and Lisa left, and like I didn't, you know, they're just like, hey, we're doing a dinner series, and I was like, we are. I was like, okay, cool. I don't know anything about this.
Well, and that means you are relatively new. Milwaukee.
Yeah, I hadn't even been to Milwaukee like a whole year.
Me and Dan
had met like, you know, having drinks at bars after work, or like, you know, going into, you know, restaurants, whatever. But like, I really think that's, you know, I really enjoy, you know, collaborations with other chefs. I always feel like you end up, you almost... In some sort of way, it's very rare to find somebody you're like, wow, that person is a real jerk or something. You know, it's like, it's almost always like there's a commonality that goes along with, you know, the personalities.
And isn't it sort of like if you're kind of a douche waffle, you probably wouldn't do a dinner with other chefs,
beyond,
right?
Yeah, totally, like, totally. Totally. But I feel like it's, you know, that you get to really get kind of get to know each other and, you know, hang out. And Oh man, there was years of that. Years of us just kind of like, you know, I don't know, hanging out just as friends. And it was at Festa, which is, I mean, I you want to talk about this a little bit, or
do you did you go to Festa together, or did you just see one another there?
No, we went.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're we're talking about doing something together, and we just happened to be walking through the Dan Dan parking lot, which was the Tulip before that.
Yeah, I think it was Tulip.
I don't even think it was Tulip. I think at that point Tulip had already closed.
It was closed for a long time.
Was there a restaurant in between there?
No.
Like in between Tulip and you guys?
No, but Tulip closed, and then that building was empty
for a long time.
Yeah, closed in 2015.
Yeah.
It was a cigar bar for the owner.
Yeah, the owner and his buddies used it as like their like dining club. Like they would bring in guest chefs and shit, and smoke cigars and drink booze.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
I guess if you can,
but why not? Why not? So you got to talking at Festa.
I mean, no, we got to talking before that, and you know, I think it's really difficult to take this sort of like leap and be your own, you know, and be the guy in charge or be the guys in charge. And I think it was, you know, it comes with a lot of hemming and hawing and, you know, trying to figure out like, man, is this really what I want to do? Like, holy shit. Like this is, I've always wanted to do this. Like how, you know, you just have all the feelings. And I had gotten an offer from another restaurant group to take over as their like executive chef.
Ooh.
You know,
we're not allowed to say who, are we?
Cause you were at Odd Duck. Right.
I was at Odd Duck, but I had left Odd Duck at this. I mean, no, I hadn't left Odd Duck at this point. I was still working at Odd Duck when we decided to do this. But you know, I was kind of flirting with you. I knew my time at Odd Duck was done.
Yeah,
I knew that it was like I could. You just kind of get that feeling one day. I mean, you guys, all of us have had jobs. Like we all know what that feels like. It's like it's just this feeling, and I hate trying to manufacture that, like, or manufacture, you know, I have to be 100% into something if I'm doing it. And so, I knew my time was up. And so, you know, I had kind of started shopping around, but we had started talking about this, and we were at Festa. Was this the same time as I accidentally grabbed Sarah's mom's butt?
Yep.
It was. I was like, man, do I tell this story? I feel like I have to. It's fun.
Now you have to.
No, it was me, Kate, Dan's girlfriend, Sarah, him, Sarah's mom. I think there was other people there, like towards the end, there was like the five of us kind of like leaving, going back to Bayview. And I thought Kate was right next to me. And so I just kind of put my hand down the side just to, you know, because it's your wife or whatever. You know, I'm just saying, hi, I'm here. And I accidentally grabbed Sarah Nardi's mom instead.
Yeah. Wrong butt.
That's funny. But it was really funny. We both got a big kick out of it. I still kind of laugh about this. I think it's funny. Yes. It was really sweet. It was very innocent. Her mom luckily didn't, like, hit me or anything. So that's
very nice. But she must have reacted in some sort of fashion.
I mean, everybody did. It was like, just like, whoa, hey, whoa, Dan, I'm sorry. But like we were walking through the parking lot, and it's funny because it's like, I don't think we realized that. I mean, we didn't at the time. We were looking to take over the Hinchland space, actually. Like we were in negotiations take over the Hinchland space, and that was originally going to be Dan Dan. And so we were walking through that parking lot, not realizing that it was the parking lot. Like we had looked at this space, but it wasn't really. It was our definitely a number two, but I think we were like menu wise and everything. We were pretty set on trying to make Hinchland work.
Wow.
And so,
which in a lot of ways, like Hinterland made sense because there was something there. It was a little bit more on the beaten path. Whereas, you know, where Dan Dan is off. You know, I mean, you have to get people to go there.
It was unproven. I felt like the inside of Hinchland was more ready for what we wanted to do or what we envisioned than what we ended, you know, or we, like walking through the Dan Dan spaces Tulip where we thought of it. It was just like, I don't really like it.
Yeah. And Esther was going to be in that back lounge area.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Which would have made sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have had this whole side, and that the was it the east wall where you had that like semi private room at Hinterland. That would have been like private rooms for like there would have been like three or four private rooms up to eight where like you just sat like you, they were like they had like the closing like paper doors kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the sliding doors. Or like karaoke rooms or something like that. Like we had kind of like kicked around some shit.
Interesting.
Like it would have been, I mean, it would have been really cool. Like we had a really good idea for it. I mean, it's still like, you know, it's funny how life works because like it's that deal fell through at like the 11th hour. Like, you know, at that point we had, so we're walking through, we're walking through the parking lot and Dan's like, man, what did you said something like, I cook good food, you cook good food, we should do this together. And I was like, yeah, man, you're right. We should. Yeah. Like, we should totally do this together. And at that point, we started to get real serious about it. Like, we you know, brought in, you know, started seeking out investors, like, went to our first investor, you know, and got real lucky and got, you know, was able to find one investor to kind of float the whole thing. And, you know, it was great. It was a great partnership, and it just that was probably the moment it started. And then I gave my notice at Odd Duck, thinking that this was really going to happen. And then so the plan was we would take over. And tell me if I'm wrong about this, Dan, because this is like way back machine, and I'm trying to remember all this shit. But the like we were supposed to take over December 1st. And then we would run it as Hinterland through Valentine's Day. And then we close down and remodel and do Dan Dan.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Wow. That was the big plan. And then like the day after Thanksgiving, super hungover, I found out that the deal fell through for the space. At that point, I had given my notice already. I couldn't go backwards on that.
Right.
And it was like, you know, then we started scurrying, trying to find, you know, another space. And we took a longer look at Dan Dan, where Dan Dan is now. Spoke with Robert and Nathan, who runs Robert's business. But they were, you know, started talking to them, you know, started looking at the space and started to realize, like, maybe there's something here. Like, there's a lot of things to like about this. I mean, I don't think you could discount the importance of a parking lot in the third ward.
Oh, a parking lot anywhere in Milwaukee. Sure. We were just
especially the third ward where it's just like that's kind of a neighborhood where people talk about like, oh, parking down there is such a nightmare, and it can be. So to have that space as your own.
Yeah. Really, there's a lot of parking. It's just a matter of whether or not you want to park and pay for parking in a
and how
in a
good
structure.
You are at parallel parking
and how good there's that.
Which judging by Wisconsin drivers. Low percentage.
And if they were good at it before the pandemic, they're not good at it anymore.
I think in the end it worked out. Obviously, I think it worked out really well.
Well, obviously, you're still around. Because was it 2016 when you opened?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Am I remembering this?
I think the Hinterland space has like such a spotlight on it and is like we said, like it's kind of more on a main drag. It's more easily findable, I guess. So I think you guys bringing your names, bringing your angle to a space that kind of needed a kick and needed something. Like, I don't think just anywhere could have thrived in the former Tulip space.
No.
I think the right thing needed to go in there.
And I think in the end, the rotating cast of restaurants in that space sort of proved that.
Yeah. Like, you know. It's Chard that's in Hinterland. Yeah. Right now, yep. I think you guys could have succeeded in the old Hinterland, but I don't think Chard could have succeeded in your space.
Yeah, I mean, it's it was
that's not a dig on Chard. I want to make sure that's not me saying
no. I don't think it is. It's just I think you're probably right. Like we were able to kind of like parlay our names into, you know, helping to push people towards that side of the third ward. But you're right. There's not really much there. I mean, at the time, the Domus wasn't even there. It was just an empty piece of land across the street.
You don't casually walk past there unless it's Summerfest, and even then, you don't normally walk that way.
It's the worst. Don't even get me started on Summerfest.
I'm so sorry,
man. Very few things make me angrier than Summerfest.
I was gonna say it is one of the worst places to be during Summerfest. And that's like not even a point of discussion, right? Like
I'm always shocked at the numbers we do during Summerfest. So like we closed the first year and you don't really realize, like, you're like, okay, yeah, we'll just close down the first year. And then you're like, holy shit, there's no revenue coming in like for that whole week. You're like, bills don't stop for a week, but that, like, holy shit, like we still have to pay everybody. So we're like, okay, we can't do that again. Let's not do that again. Let's just stay open and see what happens. Our numbers stay consistently as far as like the diners, butts in seats. That usually stays about the same. People that go to Summerfest spend about 30% less. And my theory is that they got to spend $12 on a Bud Light, so, or a, whatever, a Miller Lite. So that's it impedes their ability to spend a bunch of money on dinner.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where we get hit the hardest. Ester Ev is like a nightmare. We did it during Summerfest this year. It was so tough for like the diners just to get like to get through to park. Yeah. You know, traffic was a real bitch. I don't think we'll do that again. But yeah, all right, I'll get off my Summerfest tangent.
No, that's okay. Summerfest is hard for most businesses in the Third Ward, but if you are on that stretch, which is the main entry, like for anybody driving to Summerfest,
the first year we saw like three car accidents like on the street,
yeah,
like
right there,
because
right.
People don't, yeah. Well, because it's not really set up in any way that makes sense. All of a sudden you would take a two lane street and turn it into a four lane highway. It doesn't work out well. But yeah, no. So like, we opened up after Summerfest the first year in like 16. But it was a long road to get to that open. There's a lot of I don't think, you know, the amount of things that we didn't know how to do were hilarious. Like, you know,
like having been chefs for,
yeah,
years,
but like
years,
never being owners, like I didn't know that employers pay employer tax. Like I got real mad at our accountant. I was like, well, what's this $6,000 charge, or what's this? What is this for? And they're like, well, that's employer tax. I was like, we pay that? Like what?
I pay to have employees. What the hell?
It broke my brain for
a minute. 3 payroll months.
Oh yeah, man. And like you just have a 3 payroll month and it's just like you go from a profitable restaurant to like an extremely not profitable restaurant. And you're like, oh shit. Like, I mean, there's just these weird little like things, like dealing with the city, man, dealing with construction and like those guys have their own world of timelines. Like I still don't understand how their timelines work. Their timelines are so weird.
Well, I think it comes down to like being a chef and spending your time cooking and costing and doing all of that is worlds different from running an entire business. You know?
Yeah.
That's no, different. Different costing, you know?
Totally. Different. No, it was totally different. It's funny because I tell people that all the time. I'm just like, man, it's like you think you're ready until you're actually there. And I think a lot of cooks do this. I think we all kind of look at when we were cooks, like you look at the sous chef, or you look at the executive chef, or you look at the owners, and you always think like, oh man, those guys aren't working that hard. They're not really into it. You don't know what they have to do until you do their job. And then you're like, okay, never mind. I have more respect for those people than I did
when people need an entire day to do paperwork, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's dig a little bit further into like what makes you guys work together. Because obviously, you know, you're friends, but it doesn't always work. Like friends can go into business together and it can be this horrific sort of thing. You know, you can run into conflicts you didn't anticipate. But I mean, you guys are definitely yin and yang. We can tell just by the conversation, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, Jacobs is talking, you know, and DBR, you're, you know.
All right, man, I'll be quiet. Laid
back. Go ahead. No, I didn't mean that in a bad way. but that's just sort of, you know, like, is it that sort of, like, because I feel like you're simultaneously pretty similar in some fashion and then really, really different in other ways.
I think we have a lot of similar likes, and I think there are a lot of things that we both dislike. I think fundamentally, like, we agree at core values and, you know, core things, but, like, our personalities are vastly different, you know, and I think how, you know, and I think it allows us to kind of handle the staff in a really great way, because sometimes I could come on too hard and it takes Dan to kind of settle things down a little bit. I think there's, you know, I think there's definitely like a balance there. And I've said this a couple people before, like it's, if you go back, you know, at its heart, it's like any other relationship. Like you have to be honest with the other person, and you have to, you know, be able to say, you know, tell them a truth, you know, or, you know, just fucking be able to have a conversation. Like you can't bottle shit up. I mean, whatever, man, like we fight just like anybody else. Like it's just like any, you know, but like our fights are like, it's more like fighting with like your older brother. like any, I don't even, like, I mean,
they don't last very long.
No, man, it's like our fights are very quick, and but I think we're both of that nature too. Like, all right, man, what's the problem? All right, here's how we deal with it. All right, let's move on. Like,
yeah.
Or remember when we got in a fight because we ran out of blue drink?
No,
the Powerade.
No,
it was like day three. They had a drink on the menu using Powerade.
Okay.
And you're like, you can't order properly. And I was like, hey, we've never been through a whole thing, a whole box of Powerade in 3 days.
And that's when Jordan was your bartender, your opening bartender, right? Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a lot of Powerade to go through.
And once you say something like that to somebody, I say that to him, and then he retorts back, and you're like, yeah, man, it's like, oh shit, I'm sorry, you're right. Like, you're totally right. I mean, even like this weekend. So like me and Dan, you know, over the course of the last, you know, few years, we've just taken on different responsibilities, and we do different things in the kitchens. Like, we can't both do the same thing, obviously, but like, was that we're together again doing SRF service. It's been me and Zach Castillo for years, but Zach just took a position as the chef at Birch. His first day was last week, and so this was our first weekend without him. And I snapped about something, and Dan's like, just chill out. And I was like, you're right, man, I'm sorry. I'm getting too like anxious and too hot for like no reason. But I think there's like, you have to be able to have those kind of like difficult conversations, and I think it that's how, you know, that works. You know, food wise, it's always been a bunch of us tasting things. Like, I think we've always subscribed to the rule of, you know, the more people who are tasting something, you know, the better the end product's going to be. And I think that's always been kind of like a driving force as to like how the food gets from point A to point B.
No. Were there any dishes that you simply like disagreed upon in terms of what to put on the menu?
No.
Like,
we're
pretty much on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't, I mean, really.
Because that's kind of nothing, remarkable, I would think. Right.
There's nothing. I mean, there's stuff like this. So, like, when we first put the chicken wings on the menu at Dan Dan, I think we were, you know, trying to fight between whether it was going to be dry rub or if it was going to be saucy and wet, and trying to figure out what that balance was. And instead, it just became both. Like, you know, we just put the sauce on the bottom and did the dry, toss them in dry rub. So, I mean, I always feel like that's kind of, you know, I think that's a good example. I mean, there's always like compromise there, but man, for the most part, like, we might have started the ideas of Dan Dan, but like that shit has been carried on. I mean, restaurants evolve, tastes evolve, mm-hmm. like the menu evolves, and even the stuff that's been on the menu since the beginning, like the General Tso's cauliflower, that sauce is not the same as the same sauce that we opened up with.
How so? Like, am I allowed to ask what's altered or changed without
sugar?
Sugar.
Really?
Your secret ingredient is sugar. You know what keeps things crispy for a long time? Sugar. Like, it's I'm not getting into the levels, it's obscene, but like it is one of those things that like, but things evolve, like, you like, and it's not even, I mean, that it just is what it is. Like Bergen's our executive chef, and I mean this is more the fact when we had Fool's Errand. Like we had more need of an executive chef when we before the pandemic. We were doing catering, we were consulting, we were doing, you know, we had Fauntleroy, Dandan, Esrev, we had the Pfizer Forum. Right. You know, now we just have Dandy and SRF. And so, but, you know, Bergen's always been a real strong guy. And Evan's the chef de cuisine at Dandan. And the two of them drive that menu now mostly. And it's, I feel like the food there is better than it's ever been.
Well, and you've had a lot of people kind of go through there who've probably influenced a little, you know, I mean,
you know, I feel Kristen like that's,
on doing dumplings for a while, you know.
Hell yeah. Like, no, I think me and Dan are both agree on this, and you know, you chime in on this one. But I think we've become. I think what we've been most proud of lately is just like the people that have come through there and what they're doing now, and like how they have evolved.
Yeah, yeah. But DBR knows all about this because Hinterland was the home for the lost children and the orphans.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I got lucky.
You did. You. I mean, you always had a great staff. At Hinterland, you know.
Yeah, sometimes. I also welcomed like short timers, you know, that needed 3 months to work and transition to something else that they're doing. Yeah. So I got to work with some really good people.
Yeah, well, and the menu was always changing, but I mean, I remember when Lisa Kirkpatrick did desserts for a little while. You know,
yeah.
Paul maybe was there. Was he there Paul, at the same time?
No, he kind of helped.
Okay.
He helped out once in a while, but they're trying to open up their own thing.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was called back then.
Well, and then Jacobs, you were at Odd Duck. Like, I feel like the best places have folks who come through, and there's more of a collaborative atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah, and okay. I think if you talk to Wilson Ross, they would say the same thing that I just said about, like, you know, our past employees and, you know, I think they'd have the same things to say because I think they've always made a point that they were real proud that every like chef de cuisine that's ever been through there has gone on to open up their own restaurant and do something fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of evolving, because I think this is one of the things, like, you guys kind of came out of the doors with Peking Duck. And I want to talk about Peking Duck because I don't know that everybody understands it necessarily. But you guys definitely, you know, that was a showcase. But I don't remember when you first opened. I remember you telling me like you invested in special equipment, correct?
The oven, yeah.
Yeah. Which isn't quite the same as the equipment, maybe, that is used in
China.
I'm trying to remember.
It's totally different.
I don't, my memory.
I don't either. Like, I mean, we bought this Alto Sham oven in the beginning because that's how we figured it was big enough that we could get the ducks in there whole, you know, and we could control like humidity and temperature, mm-hmm. you know, and fan speeds and, you know, really kind of play it, like kind of dial in like what we figured was a perfect recipe. I think if you took the Peking duck that we did then and put it up against the Peking duck we do now, there's no comparison as this Peking duck is a far superior product.
Well, and coming out the door, didn't you have to order it in advance? How did that work? I'm trying to remember. Is that still how it is?
It's still a thing.
Yeah.
We offer, I don't know. I mean,
well, because it's hard to gauge if you just said, Peking duck on the menu. You know, people would come in and order it, and it would just be gone, kind of like barbecue.
I mean, they sell it. I mean, we sell out a Peking duck almost every day. I can't tell, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't tell you the last time we were like, oh man, we better cook off these ducks because they're going to go bad. Like, I don't think that's ever happened. And we, you know, we age the ducks. We don't age the ducks as long. This started at Fauntleroy when we used to do the duck presentation at Fauntleroy. We had kind of stole this from Lee Wallen at Boca, but aging the ducks, just kind of like hanging them and letting them kind of air dry for a week or two, really improves like texture, flavor, crispability of the skin. I just made that word up. I'm gonna.
I like crispability.
I think crispability is a word.
Pending.
I,
patent pending on crispability.
It's either crispability or crisp capable, and I think crispability is much more fun.
But like, I think the dry aging really does that. And so, like, when we Bergen actually put that to the Peking duck, and I think it is a far superior product than the one that we had done before. We had done it in the traditional way, where like you blow the skin. Dan, you can run through the process because you used to do these. You used to do these like every week.
Yeah, this is way easier now. You get a bit more consistent product because before we used to hang them whole and basically blow them up, separate the skin, rub the cavity, blanch them, and then hang them and rotate them. But now it's you just break it down and age them on the rib cage, and it's more controlled.
Yeah,
way faster.
We have a whole cooler.
So you're not doing a whole dock.
No,
I mean, you're aging
the whole dock, but then breaking it down for the.
Yeah, so you're still getting the courses stay the same. Like we still start out with soup. You know, then we do the duck with the scallion pancakes and the hoisin sauce presentation, and then we do a stir fry with chow fun noodles and soft boiled duck eggs.
Yeah.
We still can't feed the legs.
Yeah, the legs go into that stir fry. Like that's where the comfy legs go to.
What do you think it is the kind of intrigue or the appeal of Peking duck, and how is it just the show of it? Is it just or is it beyond, like why is this dish, like we're doing basically a podcast about this one dish.
Yeah.
But what is it about this duck that kind of has intrigued people for years upon years upon decades throughout time?
I mean, I think it's the crispy skin and the amount of food that you actually get. It's like,
I feel like it's a, go ahead.
It's a lot of food for two people to eat.
Yeah.
Not very many people finish all the courses. It's pretty good for four people.
Yeah. I was just gonna toss in there, like, you know, I think part of it is that, you know, you share it in a group. It's like a celebratory thing. Like, it's part of, like, you don't just go to a restaurant and be like, let's order the Peking duck. I mean, maybe somebody does, but, like, I don't think I feel like it's more of a plan. Like, it's more part of the a bigger thing happening.
It's kind of like ordering lobster at a restaurant.
Totally.
I feel like it's a special occasion dish. And I feel like maybe, and I don't know if that really has anything to do with the process, which is definitely worthy. You know, like it's, the process makes it definitely special occasion worthy, if that makes sense. But I feel like duck is sort of in that category. Like nobody just goes to a restaurant and orders duck 90% of the time. Maybe now like there's more duck breast on a menu. But I feel like growing up when you went to like, I don't know, the more supper clubby places on the continental.
Yeah.
Duck was a thing. And whether you could prepare a good duck or not was a thing.
Yeah, you get it like a half bird almost instead of how they, like you get it now and it's like, it's broken down. You have like your legs cooked usually differently than the breast is cooked. But like, I mean, I was just at Three Brothers last night and the duck comes as like a half a bird, like half a chicken. It's just kind of funny. It's just like, but you're right. It's definitely something that you don't really see very often.
Yeah. You know, and there's all those kind of famous dishes like duck L'Orange and, you know, like old classic things that I feel like were special occasion dishes.
There was I remember Ted Allen on Best Thing I Ever Ate had like one of his things was like a duck dish where they like squeezed they like put the duck in a press.
Yeah, and like squeezed the duck press. Hell yeah.
And they like squeezed the jus out of it and it was like, duck just seems to lend itself to a production.
That's a cool presentation. If you like, I highly recommend if anybody gets a chance to like have like the cart come out with the duck press and have the guy make the sauce like tableside and shit. I highly recommend that. I love that old school like French shit that you just don't see anymore. Like it's, I always had high hopes like Fauntleroy was going to eventually mold into that place, kind of place. But yeah, whatever. So,
Carl Rosh had a duck press.
Yep. We tried to get it off of Thomas.
Yeah, we tried to buy it off of Thomas before
he left. It ended up going to auction, though, I think, right?
Maybe we need to make like a small like 10-seat restaurant, and it's just exclusively duck press dishes.
just
real, real, the most niche restaurant.
I was about
to
say, man, you were going for that niche market.
Well, you know, laser focused concepts do work.
I don't know if this one will, Laura.
I'm not sure.
Duck press has got much of a future. Yeah. But
well, and not everyone loves duck, which is why, you know, I mean, there's also that. But so picking duck, I mean, part of the trick with it is to give it a crispy skin, which usually that's about like separating the skin or blowing air. Mm. Right? Is blowing air part of that?
You separate the skin from the flesh.
Yeah.
He's using an air compressor. It was real loud. I think I have video of it. Like, this was a long time ago.
Then you get the nice little puffy ducks.
Yeah.
Those little balloon ducks.
Yeah. We simplified it. It's easier to work with now, and it's more consistent.
Yeah, it takes like half the amount of time, and I feel like it tastes like two times better.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like this is a dish where most home cooks don't tackle it. Although, and what I know about picking duck, honestly, I learned from Kenji.
Jay Kenji Lopez.
You know, if I'm making something and I don't know what it is, it's usually the first place I stop is the receipts.
He's the guy who got me into food.
Well, and he got me intrigued with the idea of making Peking duck because he has he adapted a like beer can chicken method.
Yeah. Sure.
What I know about the process of picking duck, I think I learned from reading through that. And it's kind of like, because he goes through, well, this is technically how you do it. And this is like not practical for home cooks. So here's what you would do, right? Like, if you were going to. And doubtless, you know, his techniques have a tendency to work. So, so that's what I know. But otherwise, process-wise, like, is it honey and sherry? Am I remembering this correctly? Like, that are the components? Like, you guys age the duck first, and then you cure it with, like...
We glaze it with maltose and honey. Sometimes just honey, but...
All right.
Interesting.
And then it goes and gets cooked at that point?
Yes.
Yes. And is that a long process or is that a short?
Well, because of the way we broke it down, it's shorter than it used to be, but it's about 18 minutes, 16 to 18 minutes in the oven.
Okay. That's not terribly long at all.
It seems long to me. In a restaurant, that's like an eternity. Yeah, you're like, oh my God.
Home cook style. Yeah. That's
taking
like,
so long. Yeah.
But like, I would wait in a restaurant 20 minutes for somebody to make something for me.
Seriously. So,
like, yeah, that's fine.
Well, and we kind of stagger it. So you get the soup first with the foie gras and duck confit dumplings. It's like a broth made from the bones. Super rich and salty. And it just kind of get like, you can't stop eating it. That comes out like 10 minutes after you order, which gives us enough time to roast the duck, the 16 minutes, and then let it rest for like 10 minutes.
Well, that's smart. I think I've had the Peking duck twice. And once it was carry out for the holidays over the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that's how I can trace kind of the evolution of this. And the first time was, I think it was within the first year you guys opened.
You should come back and get it again. I hope you appreciated the amount of time that Bergen took in those directions. Like, those were like a true labor of love, those directions.
So they came with their like a to-do list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of instructions.
somewhat illustrated
instructions.
Yes. Somewhat illustrated too, which
was
kind of
like
fun.
Lego instructions where it was like each thing was like a photo. It was just like adding like three things to it. Just like
I'm starting my first Lego build of something, and it's like a Star Wars thing. It's like a very adult thing, and I'm terrified now of it. You say that.
No,
for somebody
who
doesn't follow instructions, I'm not gonna do fine. Yeah.
You're gonna do great. You're gonna do great.
You'll do fine if there's pictures, right?
Yeah. Maybe so. We'll find out.
Yeah.
The stressful part about Legos is when you like are 27 instructions deep and you realize you're missing a piece or that you missed a step and you're just like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with this thing now? And
smash.
You have a panic attack, and then and then you take a baseball bat to it. It's great.
Hulk smash.
Yeah.
So, well, I've always loved duck, and duck was always the thing that I ordered when my parents were pretty good at taking us to dinner when we were kids. Like, they would take us fancy places.
Humblest brand.
Barely.
I never would have ordered that as a kid.
You know, and my parents took us places. But I always ordered the duck. Whenever there was duck on the menu, I always ordered duck. And I learned really, really quickly that duck was either really good with crispy skin and tender, like, juicy meat, or it was dry and nasty. Mm-hmm. And tasted gamey and dry and whatever. And so, I don't know. So picking duck is definitely my thing. But is it everybody's thing? Like, did people actually order... Like, did people take to it when you first opened?
I think so.
We have specific customers that just come in and that's what they get. They come once a month.
You have Peking duck regulars?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Nice. And do you guys actually use the Peking ducks?
Yeah, we do.
Or you use a different breed?
Yeah.
Nope. We use the Peking ducks for that. And when we were at Fauntleroy, we would use the Rohan ducks. And in SRF, we use the Rohan ducks. But like, the Peking duck is it's the best duck for that sort of preparation.
Yeah. And why is that?
That's going to ask.
Thinner skin.
It's the skin.
The skin's thinner.
That would make sense.
The skin is the game. I mean, that's really like, that's what you want out of that. Like, I guess with all duck, like, I mean, you want it to be juicy, like you said, otherwise it's dry and nasty. But like, that crispy skin is like the end all be all. If you can't do the crispy skin and the skin ends up flabby and like, it's just, yeah.
You don't want to deal with it.
There is a, and this is sort of a side note, but I've gotten into, I love places like Dan Dan. I mean, I love Asian food, but I am, as a home cook, I'm good at a number of things, but cooking Asian food is not one of them. Like, I've made stir fries for years and years, and Paul, my husband, is actually usually quite... Like, well, he's honest with me about my food. And probably the one thing that he has been most critical of is anytime I make Asian food. Because he's not wrong. He says every time you make an Asian dish, well, a Chinese dish particularly, they taste exactly the same every single time. Like, I'm like a one-trick, one-dimensional pony. Like, yeah, because I'm separating out, like, Thai food and, like... other things. But I literally, it doesn't matter what condiments I put together, if I wing Chinese food, it tastes exactly the same every single time. And because I think all I have in my head is like, it's got to be like sweet, salty, sour. All has to be balanced.
you should try Walks of Life.
Yes. And I have. The blog?
Yep. Blog. Yeah.
So I've started branching out and cooking with recipes. Like, I decided I can't wing Asian food. But I also found this amazing recipe for, it's just a noodle bowl that basically takes some basic, like, there's a lot of flexibility for different sauces, but it's written by a Taiwanese expatriate who was raised in Canada and then moved to Singapore. And she has this recipe for, it's like a sauce noodle dish with fried shallots and poultry skin, some sort of poultry skin, fried as the, like, the textural element.
Mm.
And it's the most delicious thing I've ever made. I can kind of take credit because she gives a lot of suggestions, but she can, like, put together different ingredients, like, for the sauce. You know, it's like soy sauce and then some sort of, you know, paste, usually like a chili bean paste of some sort. And I'm trying to think, a little bit of mirin, maybe. I can't say that by hand, but I've become masterful at crisping up either chicken or duck skin. But this dish is so much better with duck skin. It's just that duck skin is hard to find.
I just love that you described your own cooking as masterful, Lori. That's not a humble brag. That's just straight up brag.
Damn it. You're calling me on this humble brag thing, and I'm not trying to brag. I think it's just that the food, like it's not that hard. It's not that hard to fry chicken skin or duck skin in a pan, you know. But when you talk about Peking duck, that's immediately I think of this noodle dish because the skin makes the dish.
I think it's definitely one of the things that I think we're most proud of, and it's also one of the things that like not saying in a humble, not saying humbly at all. It's one of those things that I feel like we do exceptionally well. Like it's, yeah. I feel like I'd put our duck service up against anybody's duck service. It's really good. I mean, the guys really do a good job with it.
Were there concerns about doing it during the pandemic still and being like, well, is this something that can translate to?
I mean, during the height of the pandemic, like 2020, 2021, when did we bring it back? We brought it back last fall, I think, right, Dan?
Okay.
Yeah, that's when we switched it up.
Yeah, that was like the first thing on the chopping block.
Anything that didn't travel well, like that wasn't going to be easily to go, and then something that you would have to, something like an expensive ingredient that you were kind of like holding on to, that was tough. Like that's a tough one to just kind of like bring back in there.
And did you bring it back for Thanksgiving? Was that when?
Or Christmas? Yeah, I feel like we were doing it. We did it for Thanksgiving. No, we didn't do it for Thanksgiving. We did it for Christmas and for New Year's.
Like Christmas. Okay.
Christmas and New Year's. Which is a smart way to reintroduce it because that's the time of year when, you know, typically people are, you know,
even last year, especially like, I mean, last year, like, we had a terrible month of December. Like, it was one of the worst, months. Like, I mean, I had COVID, like, most of the staff had COVID. Like, it was like that. We did that Peking duck to go because we weren't even open, if I'm right. Yeah. I don't even think we were open that whole week between Christmas and New Year's, which is like our busiest week of the year, usually.
Yeah.
Like, it was terrible.
Yeah, last year was a bizarre year.
Yeah, so. They're not getting less bizarre. I mean, or maybe they are. Maybe the bizarreness is just the goalposts keep changing every year.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit more normal. Feel a little bit more easy going out. You know, I think you know,
we definitely see more people out.
Yeah.
I mean, just over the past year.
There's a little bit more of a sense of like, well, this is now the world. Whereas like last year, even when it did feel like it was like all fine, then the late summer variant stuff popped up and we were like, oh, cool. This is a new and exciting thing.
And I don't think there was any, again, it was like, there's not, and there wasn't like 100% solid great information as to what, as a business owner, you're supposed to do in the event of like staff having COVID. And, you know, and some of it was real Wild Westy, and it was like, you know, staff's like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. And it's tough. I mean, the restaurants have been hit, you know, particularly hard, not just like with the pandemic, but also like, I mean, with so many things over the last 2 years, you look at like inflation, you look at workforce, you know, shortcomings.
Supply chain stuff.
Yeah. It's just tough, man. It's been tough all around. And so like, if the staff doesn't feel confident in what you're doing, it's like, oh, shit. Yeah. You know, it's just, there's nothing you can do. It just sucks.
Well, yeah. And you guys were pretty, you guys did a lot of things, to kind of, like, you just developed procedures for yourself to try to keep people. I mean, I remember during kind of the shutdown, you turned the restaurant pretty much into a space to hang out so that folks didn't feel the need to, like, go out to bars.
Yeah, and it gives you that, you know, like, the like, hey, we can all just hang out together. Don't go to a bar.
And you were, like, testing. I think everybody was testing, like, weekly? Was it weekly?
No, we did every. We did. It was like every night. It was like every night. It was like a little clubhouse. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. Testing. Like testing for COVID. I think you guys all went.
Oh,
like
everybody went every weekly. Yeah. Every week. So. Every week we had to go get a test. It was quite the, like, making appointments and doing all that shit. I mean, now it's kind of like, was it like Kate? I mean, even my wife, Kate, she had COVID in June, and I was able to somehow not have COVID. We kind of separated our house, and I ended up sleeping in the upstairs, like we have our second floor the whole time. And Kate stayed on the first floor most of the time. But, like, I never got it, and I got a booster, and I got that one time last December, and that was it. But I think you're right. I think people are a little bit more okay with the idea that this is kind of like more of a norm, and we kind of have an understanding. All right, well, if you do test positive for COVID, you got 5 days, and then you have to wear a mask for 5 days. So yeah. I feel like everybody's feels a little bit better about it. And it's not as serious, man, because you know what's crazy? Immunization actually works. It's nuts. Like, it sure, you may not be like, absolutely. You still might get it, but you're definitely not going to be as sick. Like, I was really sick for like a day. And then it was just like residual for a couple days.
And I knew plenty of people in the beginning who got it and got severely sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I think that's, you know, largely because of vaccinations. That's largely not the case. I mean, they still question, you know, how much damage you're doing to yourself, like how much damage COVID can do to you, you know, either way.
In the long run, in the long
term. I don't think we're going to know that, you know. I don't think we're going to know that for a while.
No.
So, but yeah, but let's shift off of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, eating as many SpaghettiOs as I do, too.
Picking back was a whole lot better of a topic. Too, so. Yeah. But you guys, initially when you opened Dan Inn, you had favorite dishes from restaurants that you sort of brought to the menu. Now, if you look across the menu, and I kind of want this from both of you, do you guys have favorite things has that changed? You know, do you have things that are just like I would eat this all day, and if so, what are those things?
Okay, so things that have been on the menu the whole time that I still kind of gravitate towards are barbecue fried rice, the happy chicken.
I
kind of definitely gravitate towards, I mean, those are always going to be kind of things that I think are like, you know, faves. I think of new stuff that's been out there. There's a Taiwanese beef noodle soup it's braised, I think it's braised beef shank, I want to say. I might be wrong on the cut of meat.
Dan doesn't know how to make it anymore.
I never made it. I've never made it. So like, they make this. They make these wheat noodles, in this just kind of like spicy aromatic broth. I think that's kind of like my favorite, especially winter time. And then I'm a sucker for soups, like in general, like that. So I'm gonna go with the second soup, and that's, I asked Val, who was one of our chef cuisines, to, you know, do an egg drop soup. I just wanted to do like fucking just like egg drop soup, and she made just killer egg drop soup. Like it is so ridiculously good.
Just so rich. There's something about egg drop soup. I don't know what it is.
It's comforting.
Just delicious. Yeah, in a different way. So, DBR, what's your vote?
I always go the smashed cucumbers, the pork dumplings, happy chicken wings, and Dan Dan noodles. And then,
well, I would, as your far Dan, as the new your Dan item, Dan noodles are good, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no. I feel like your Dan Dan noodles. I feel like you are responsible for your Dan Dan noodles being good.
Oh, you have to. Like, you name the restaurant Dan Dan.
You know, like, yeah, I was going to say.
It was like, if these aren't good, like we really suck at this. Like we are not good humans. Yeah. Like,
yeah. But I love the Dan Dan noodles at Szechuan.
They're yeah, totally. They're delicious. What's funny is like,
and there's something that they do that is different. Mamma Mia does a pretty good rendition of Dan Dan noodles, but you guys also like, I don't know, you're all kind of on par. Like I would order the dish anywhere. So
it's really funny how everybody has a different take on the Dan Dan noodle. Like yeah. It's like you go to Chicago, you go to La Szechuan, and it's like it's like brothier. Like it's like it's really like light almost
and oily. I love their noodles.
Actually my favorite one is that La Szechuan in Chinatown in Chicago is my favorite Dan Dan noodle. Or the what was that place in New York City, the lady who told us we had the wrong Chinese symbols. It was Han Dynasty. Yep. Han Dynasty. Their Dan Dan noodles were exceptionally good.
I'm not Ben.
Cool. Well, there you go. There's a place for get out there.
Gotta go. Yeah.
Get out there.
For sure. But that's it. But I don't eat Chinese food when I go to New York. That's interesting.
That's crazy. You're crazy. You should totally be eating Chinese food when you go to New York City.
I take that back. I have eaten Chinese food. I love Szechuan food, and so I have sought out Szechuan food in New York.
Han Dynasty is a Szechuan place. So it's originally from Philadelphia, I think, and then they opened up one in New York City.
Okay, that makes sense. But I cut you off, TBR. So what are the new things?
Oh, the Taiwanese beef noodle. I could eat that all the time.
That's actually that's a really, really good dish. And I don't know. I don't gravitate toward beef things. I don't know why. I just don't. But that dish blew me away. It was just like comfort food immediately.
Yeah, that's pretty much Bergen's little baby.
That's awesome. Good on him. Good on you, Bert. Where is he, Laurie? If we must summon him, Jerry Springer style, to take credit for his dish. There you go. Yeah. By God, that's Bergen's music. Well, this is the most important question we can ask in all of these podcasts: is where can people find you guys? Where can people find these dishes? Find this food? Find this Peking duck?
So, Dan Dan Restaurant, we're located 316 North Milwaukee Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the 3rd Ward. We are open.
Oh, that's every the wrong day, street.
Oh, no.
We have two addresses. So, it gets a little
bit. Erie Street.
This has been, yes.
What did I say?
You said 316 North Milwaukee.
Oh my God, that's Fool's Errand. That was Fool's Errand and Pomeroy. Oh my God. Don't go there. There won't be anywhere.
Well, if you go there, you will not find Peking duck.
Go there. Yeah. Go get a donut from Donut Monster. Say hi to Jackie.
Pizza from Brood.
Yeah, go get some pizza from Paris at Brood. Like, go have a fun time. But Dan Dan's located at, man, do you guys have edit? Can you guys edit this? Anyways.
We can, but we're keeping all that in.
Oh no, it's great! It's great. It's just like a stream. So. It's a stream of consciousness.
We all miss oh my God. Right, so
So funny though. That's all right. So 360 East Erie Street. Dan Dan's open every day but Tuesday. We open at 5:00. We close at 9:00 on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday we're open until 10:00.
Perfect. And then online, where can people read up more about you guys? If you got a
DanDanMKE.com, also EstherEv.com. EstherEv is located by Dan Dan, open just Fridays and Saturdays. We have a seating at 6:00, 7:00, and 8:00. 10 courses, under $100. You really can't beat it.
Really, I was going to say fantastic insofar as. Yeah, such a good deal.
And it tastes pretty good too. Like I feel like we do some pretty good food. Well, but it is like
like the best frugal thing you've ever done. No, it's nasty. Like dried duck. It's like no, this is like high end 10 courses. Like,
but you go to Chicago and you do that. You go to Chicago and you do that, and it's like, you know, it's twice $250. Yeah, yeah, twice that, 2.5 times that. So
yet another reason why Chicago's worse than Milwaukee.
You can go on a lot of those.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that that is something
people... This is a native Chicagoan saying that.
Yeah. I feel like SDRAB is still kind of a hidden gem. And I don't know how you feel about that from your perspective. But I feel like there's a lot of people who don't actually know.
100%. 100%. Without a doubt. Like, I mean, we still have people, you know... I mean, there's still people that come into Dandan. They're like, this is our first time. I'm like, good for you. Or like, we haven't been there yet. And I'm like, oh, we'll still be there. Come on in. But SDRAB, yeah, no, it is kind of... it's a hidden gem. You know, we've always toyed around with the idea of opening another day. But it's never... We've never gotten to a point, and this is... This has always been really crazy to me of like being so full on a Friday and Saturday consistently that it makes sense to open on another day. Like we still have dud, like we, like some dud weekend day. Like we'll have like a dud Friday and we'll do like 8 people. Those 8 people are in for a treat though, because like, it's like it's just me and Dan's attention on 8 of you, you know? And so I always think that that's pretty cool. And we're out there, you know, we talk to all the customers, you know, we get stuck at tables trying to, because I mean, we still have to do another course. We're out there talking about our course. And now, especially since there's multiple seatings going on, so you have, you know, you might be doing, you know, desserts and have another group doing, you know, mids, another group just starting out, you know, the tasting menu. And so, like, yeah, a lot of things going on. And then you're stuck at a table talking about Beat Bobby Flay. And you're like, fuck. I gotta get out of here. But it's also, it's so fun. Like, I get to meet people and I get to tell people about, you know, going to, like, they're like, well, where do you go out to eat? And, you know, it was really funny. Yeah. Somebody asked me that on Saturday. And I was like, well, if you're in town one more day, check out, you know, Good Kind for brunch. You know, I was like, I'm going to Three Brothers, you know, tomorrow night for dinner. So I would definitely go there. But like, it's nice to be able to kind of like, you know, it's just fun meeting people. And I'm a talker, if you can't tell. And I like talking to people.
Which bodes well for this podcast.
Yeah.
So. Good at talking bad addresses.
Yeah, definitely. But I also feel like SDRAB, I don't know, for me, SDRAB is like, and I'm curious from your perspective, does SDRAB just keep you on your game as far as cooking goes? Because I feel like, to me, everything that I've missed about both of you cooking at different venues over the years, you know, whether it's like DBR, you at Hinterland, or Dan, you at, I don't know, Roots or Odd Duck, where I could always tell which dishes you did. This is sort of like being able to eat your food again. Only it's interesting because it's evolved in sort of a collective menu.
Sure. Yeah, I think 100%. Like, it's definitely what drives, you know, I'm going to answer for myself. It's what drives my passion. Like, always, you know, Dandan pays the bills, but SDRAB, you know, feeds the brain. You know, it's what definitely gets me up and excited about cooking in the morning. You know, and I think we've had, I've had that with all, like, I'll have moments. I have I just have a lot of, like, I tend to have a lot of ideas. And so I'll get excited about like a couple dishes. Like, I have ideas about a couple dishes at the end. And like about once every 6 months, I get on an Egg Foo Young kick and I'm fucking like trying to recreate Egg Foo Young again and try to make it so it's like different, but tastes just like I remember it tasting as a kid. And, you know, or, you know, with Fool's Errand and, you know, Fauntleroy, Fool's Errand was definitely like a, you know, a labor of like, you know, like nostalgia, I guess. And then Fauntleroy was like super fun French food. I think that's the restaurant I miss the most.
I miss Fauntleroy a ton. I miss, and it's weird because it was that dishes like pandemic. Pandemic.
You can always
the Dan pandemic.
There can always be a reboot. Can always be a reboot. If Hollywood has taught me anything, anything can be rebooted. So
I don't. Yeah. You know, you're right. There's so many things I would do differently now. But it's. I really think that was a really, like, food wise was a really solid restaurant. I mean, service, food, all that. I thought it was a really solid restaurant. And I think that space is just what it is.
Yeah. I do think that there's a lot to be said for that space playing a part.
Yeah, and, it is what it is. I wish whoever goes in there next the best of luck.
There are certain locations in Milwaukee that are like, I think we've written an article about it.
Somebody can do okay there, but I don't know who it is.
There's like cursed locations where it's just like people try like great minds, great efforts, great stuff, but it's just like some places are just really hard to make work, whether it's size, whether it, I mean, I remember the old Oriental Drugs location before it became Crossroads was kind of that, just kind of cycling through a bunch of different stuff. And it's weird because, again, it's not a space like that's a space where it's like, wow, great location.
But it's crazy, right?
It's so big. And there was just never. But I just think, there's so many ways a restaurant can struggle, and so few ways to succeed. So anytime a restaurant succeeds, you know, it's a gift.
Yeah, man. But I feel like we've been blessed. Like me and Dan have been blessed with really good staffs, front and back. People that have gone through there have been awesome. Guests have been just great. We've just been we've been seriously blessed with some restaurants take, I used to think it was more than this, but I'd say probably like 40 to 50% of like a restaurant is just luck and doing the right thing at the right time. And I think that was part of it. But like we've had just great group of people that have been through that place to really kind of take our vision and, kind of run with it as their own a bit.
Yeah.
And here's to that continuing on.
I still have great pictures of the original bathroom doors.
Oh man! What?
The original bathroom doors that you guys painted over, like do you remember? I mean, do you remember the doors in Fallerai?
We're taking those doors with us. Those doors are like.
Yeah. But didn't you? Didn't you paint over them?
We augmented
a word there, but
we should probably tell people what the heck we're talking about for those who haven't been there.
It was this is the most inside baseball we've ever gotten on this podcast. Okay,
so number one, there was
we're talking about bathroom doors now, Lori.
The bathroom doors at Fauntleroy though were like, I don't know, I like just fun.
Friend Timo made them.
Yeah. Tim did Bianca Jagger's stiletto. She wore her backstage pass on the corner of her stiletto for I don't remember the tour it was on. That was the women's restroom. And then the men's room was Mick Jagger. And I can't fucking remember the t-shirt now. I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, I
have it too. I am too, but I have pictures. They'll always love it to me.
There is swearing involved.
There was swearing involved, and I think that's the part that got like nixed at some point.
Yeah, somebody got offended by it, like on opening weekend. It was weird.
It sounds like we're gonna have to do a third podcast where we wax nostalgic about stuff and talk about
probably.
I think
probably. Man, we could talk about the way back when all day. I mean, it's been such a fucking pleasure living here for the last 11 years and seeing the growth of the city and of the food community and like making the friends and friends, and it's cool.
Yeah. We might have to have a few of you over too, like. It'd be cool to have a few chefs. Like that would be a big reminiscing session.
I mean, I really do think if like the all the chefs that are pretty tight now, I mean, it's all because of Paul and Danny. Like it's Paul Zirkle and him and Danny, those two kind of like set the table.
Yeah. You hear that, DBR?
The good old days.
Those were the good old days. I still will never forget like really meeting like what I don't know. I remember the first time we did meet at Slow Pig.
We met at Slow Pig.
And DVR bought me a beer at why am I blanking on this? Beer Bar Bayview.
Newport? Sugar Maple.
Bernhardt's. Thank you. I'm just having a mental breakdown here. Yeah, you know, bought me a beer at Bernhardt's. And I was still like in my, I mean, I hadn't been doing my job for very long. And I remember going home and feeling a little bit starstruck. DBR bought me a beer. So you can treasure that because it really was sort of like
The kids still to this day, man. All the kids get it's funny because I feel like everybody always recognized Danny. Like it's definitely the more recognizable of the two of us. But like it's cute.
Well,
there.
You know,
it's that red hair.
Kids love it when Papa Deeves is out.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look like a martial arts star. You know. Like, an actor.
Like a Chuck Norris.
Oh! Yeah.
I wasn't going to say it because, you know, that's easy. It's a little bit. I mean, that used to be the joke. And then I was correcting people. I'm like, nah, he's just the Prince of Green Bay.
Do we want to call a podcast?
I think we probably should because I think our conversation is you know,
okay, the real devolving. Question is who's still listening right now?
Yeah. Well, you know, loyal people.
It'll be interesting to see where we end up using the edit button for the last 10 minutes of this episode.
Sure.
Well, guys, I'll be interested to see where we cut this off.
Yeah.
Guys, it's always a pleasure.
I'm going to stop recording. I'm calling
really, really, truly, thank you for coming back. And, yeah, you know, as we're doing this all virtually, you know, because technology is, you know, a challenge. but it's always good to chat with you. So thank you.
For sure.
Thank you.
An excellent conversation, as always. They are return guests, so.
Well, I was kind of. I don't think we've ever had Dan Van Wright on.
Have we?
The podcast.
I thought we did. I think
no,
we have.
We've had Dan Jacobs on. For
no,
sure.
we've had them both. Have we? Apple Podcasts. Yeah, a chat with Daniel Jacobs and Dan Van Wright.
Oh,
Dan.
Did. Well, yeah. Graham.
Yeah,
that's
it was crazy. It was a podcast about authentic food.
Oh, yes. No, that was a good one too, though, because, well, yeah, let's not start that conversation again.
Yeah, that's all the
opinions.
It's a whole bunch of stuff.
Many of which we discussed in that episode. But yeah, no, I guess when you've recorded 150 plus podcasts, it's, you know, hard to keep track.
Humblest of brags, Lori Frederick.
Well, that's not a brag. It's just, it's more like a testament to my failing memory.
Hopefully you remember that what we do at this part of the podcast is we read some food porn.
We do.
Writing.
And one thing we have never done with even our returning guests is discussing Peking duck, which we did today.
Yes. Yes.
So this is a piece entitled Roast Duck Elegy by Kaming Chang. And it's sort of, an homage to that delicious.
Well, I do love homages.
So,
let's hear more.
Well,
let's
it's look. An elegy, actually, so maybe not so much of an homage, but.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Something.
Semantics.
I was just going to say. It is. But this one seems a little bit long, but I think that as we read, I don't know. I liked it when I read through it the first time. So we'll see if it comes off.
And we hope you do too, listening to it.
We do. We do. All right. So without further ado, Roast Duck Elegy by Kaming Chang. In the window of my grandma's restaurant, a whole roast duck dressed in my clothes. I eat the chives from its chest wound, tie it a twine waist. My grandmother orders me from a display of the dead, welds me a crown from cutlery, tells me the story of a soldier eating his legs at all night, bone his only light source. In this family, forgetting is famine. A body is having no choice but to eat. On the menu, we misspell chicken fingers as children fingers. We eat our gods out of grief, lose teeth to new last names. I conflate hunger with faith, fry my prayers, and cornmeal and paste. The first summer, a sea, leaving everything that sinks. Jewelry, kitchen knives, children. Bring your tongue, but not its language. Name the body, but not what slaughtered it. My grandmother carries a roast duck to bed on the first night she's a bride. As if hunger is a buffer, as if the difference between a woman and meat is wings. For months, she pretends. I waitress. My mother warns me white people don't like dark meat. The first white man to pay me strokes my knee beneath a tablecloth, knocks the pen from my hand to watch me pick it up, says, "How do I order one of you?" off the menu. My grandmother still spells duck like fuck, still beats me for eating before my father. Need is a hierarchy. How I've only ever seen my mother eat leftovers. On Sundays, she cleaves beaks, stuffs severed necks with psalms. She dices my garlic breath. My bigger breast, says a full stomach, is the best flotation device. When crossing isn't pregnant, she starves herself to shed a son and grows 3 mouths of teeth. My father, born 5-limbed and fat. Proof the body will live for anyone but itself. Proof I'm alive because a man did not die, because a woman was willing to. So
I think there's more to unpack here than just roast duck and
so much to unpack here.
Yeah. That's but really, there's some really, really beautiful turns of phrase in there.
Yes. And some really kind of sobering thoughts about the world.
Yes.
All in a poem under the title of roast duck.
These segments used to just be us reading words of food in sexy voices, and now it's like us reading things about, you know, the patriarchy and also and also duck.
yes, gender roles and some, you know, all entwined with food. But you know, it's interesting because, as they say, everything is a little political. Yes. And that includes food. And it always fascinates me how poets use food to illustrate points. I don't know. So let's not be that. Let's not be sober forever.
Yes.
In terms of mood.
No, but we are, unfortunately, sadly, we are wrapping up. So before we go, Lori, where can people find you? On the internet.
People can find me at Lo Frederick at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Where if I do eat a roast duck, I will probably post a picture of it. So how about you, Matt?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But most importantly, you can find Food Crush where? Lori, where?
Where? You can find Food Crush at Food Crush Pod. Oh, excuse me. Food Crush Pod, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all those places. And because it's dining month, I don't know. We should start planning something exciting.
We should start. To do. We should think about it. We should at least definitely think about it.
Yeah, for sure. So, I don't know, but watch our social media. We're going to be mysterious about it, but should we find
we're gonna
something
be sneaky.
To taste? Yeah.
We need to eat some special things. Maybe it'll be food. It. Maybe I'll make some food and you'll eat it and you'll tell me what I
And then I'll die, then. According to you.
And then you will die of horrible, horrible food-related diseases because I'm a bad cook.
I am not going to die. But so you ate your chorizo and potato stew slash soup, which actually sounds really delicious.
Which also we talked about in a previous episode. So yes, this is 2 episodes worth of soup that I'm eating right now.
Yeah. And I made over the weekend a white lasagna with ricotta cheese and bitter greens.
Okay.
That was so good and so much better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, I'm fine with kind of a veggie lasagna as long as it's not, you know. It's when it's like really heavy on the veggies. That's when it throws me off. Yeah. Like, I want the lasagnas to still feel like lasagna and not a veggie dish that you put lasagna in.
This felt like a really good cheesy pasta dish.
Like a gratin?
And it did have sort of, I mean, a layered cheesy pasta dish. The bitter greens kept it from being like too rich and crazy. And there were some sun-dried tomatoes in there, which, interestingly enough, a sun-dried tomato tends to come off as sweet, you know, kind of sweet and raisiny in a lot of dishes. And in this dish, it cooked in with the greens and just gave it this amazing umami flavor that sort of made you not really, really not miss the meat. Like, it was just, I don't know. I'm definitely going to make it again. It was an off-the-cuff bizarre idea. I had a whole bunch of greens to get rid of, and I'm like, how can I make these greens really interesting and eat and like make a dish that uses a whole bunch of them all at once? So,
well, you found one. It sounds great. Honestly, I'm like I said, I'm very much kind of a Puritan when it comes to lasagna, but everything you've said sounds delicious. Yeah. So, gosh, well, thanks, Lori. Well, now you got me hungry. And I'm eating.
I make a really good traditional lasagna, actually. That's
lasagna just seems like so much work. That's the only problem I have with lasagna. What? Lasagna just seems like so much work.
Well, I guess it's work if you actually make it from start to finish. Like, if you actually make the sauce. I think people make lasagna into this big, like it's, it takes so much time. And it does. Yeah. And I tend to make the sauce. So I guess it's a project, but it's just, I don't know. Sundays are for cooking at my house typically. And, I don't know. I don't mind the time, I guess. but yeah, a lot of people think lasagna is really hefty. I mean, if you just pour, this is a conversation for another day. Because I feel like if you just pour sauce in a, you know, between some noodles.
Doesn't count?
Well, it counts because it's lasagna. But it's just not the same. Because it's one of those things where you have to take the time to make it good. Maybe that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah. Much to unpack. We'll have to do a whole episode on this sometime. We'll talk more about these things. We'll discuss these matters. But in the meantime, we're going to call it quits. We're going to call it a day. But thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to Lori, my awesome co-host. Thank you to our producer, Gabe. Thank you to our awesome guests. And one more time, because you deserve it, thank you to our listeners. You guys are the best. And as always, keep cooking. All right.